do you like sci-fi? Would you like to be part of an exclusive club that's all about sci-fi? Then GalacticNetcasts.com has you covered. You're personally invited to join the Sci-Fi Geeks Club. The best part is there's no expensive dues, silly oath, or embarrassing initiation. All you have to do is listen, and if you like it, subscribe. Every week, a bunch of us geeks and a guest, sometimes a famous guest, sit around and discuss the latest news in the world of sci-fi and geek culture. Just go to GalacticNetcasts.com/listen or search for the Sci-Fi Geeks Club on iTunes, Stitcher, or on the TuneIn Radio app. Then, join the club, as in the Sci-Fi Geeks Club.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned-out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, December 4th, 2014. Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 126, a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me, as always, is Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. What's happening, guys?
Eating sweet potato pie.
Sweet potato pie is what's happening, man.
I have no idea what that would even taste like.
It tastes like awesome.
It does.
You know what? I'm going to take your word for it.
It's really good. If you ever are in this area, I will make a sweet potato pie just for you.
All right. Our trip back to the States next year, we will drive out to Wausau, and I will make you live up to your promise of sweet potato pie.
I'll totally make the sweet potato pie. It's nice and creamy and yummy.
All right. Hey, let's get down to business here. We're kind of on a timeline this evening, so let's get to it. This is the show where we talk about aliens, extraterrestrial kind, and their appearances in all different venues, platforms, what have you, like your movies, your TV shows, your video games, your comic books, your weird news stories, your science, wherever they are, we talk about them, and break the show down into three sections, the news, the craft corner. That's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien spacecraft and our picks for the week. You can watch us live either at galacticnetcasts.com/live or youtube.com/galacticnetcast. So let's get the show on the road.
In the news.
And looking here on the dock, according to the information, Brad has the first story.
I do. So I decided to check out CNET this time for my story, and it's 8 space theories that you won't believe other people believe.
Okay.
The one thing that's really happening right now is we've got the internet. Obviously, we're using it right now to do the show. The thing about the internet is it allows you to freely exchange ideas and information, which in and of itself is a good thing, except when there are conspiracy theories or people that don't science well sharing these things, and they pass along the crazy. And CNET breaks down, it's a great story. Thanks to, you know, the pictures and information that people have found on the internet, we've managed to share things like, you know, the 67P, the comet.
The comet.
We've been able to catch video of the ISS. And now the reason why I'm bringing up these two particular items is that one of the things we're going to talk about is the belief that the comet, 67P, where the probe landed and started to do recordings, and unfortunately it's now in sleep mode because it didn't get enough sunlight to power the systems. People believe that the information that was recorded, and there was a recording that was done by this probe, and the recording, and I think we talked about this in the last episode, is a very interesting sound. And the conspiracy theory is that interesting sound is alien contact being made, possibly a warning, and that's being suppressed from the people, you know, probably by the Illuminati or whatnot. I'm not going to do all eight of these, but I'm going to do the bottom four. I'm going to do 8 through 5, and these are awesome. Number 8, there is a UFO hiding behind the sun.
What's behind the sun? I mean, there's no behind the sun because the sun's spinning, right?
Yeah, well, and we're always orbiting the sun. We're always traveling around it, so...
If it has to be behind the sun the whole time, it has to move as well, whatever this object is.
Well, yeah. The thing is, we've got a satellite that is recording sun activity. It is designed to record solar flares and to try to give a heads up in preparation to major coronal mass ejections that could cause issues for satellites and communication and the power grids, just to give basically a space weather warning and an early alert to things like that. But unfortunately, there was a picture that was taken that people have blown up to a super huge size, and they see this like little sort of almost looks like a triangular thing to the side of one of the images of the sun, and they are saying that it's a UFO and it's just hiding behind the sun waiting to make its move and raise all sorts of havoc for mankind.
Of course, that's evidence right there, right? Case closed.
Absolutely. Coming in at number 7 was the one that I led in with, is that the comet is not a comet, that it's actually a UFO, and the quote-unquote song is actually a warning from the extraterrestrials inside.
Of course.
And there's an ESA, the European Space Agency, whistleblower that has absolutely confirmed this unequivocally, that there are aliens inside that comet, and it's not actually a comet, it's a spacecraft.
I want answers. I want the truth.
The interesting thing about the shape of the Rosetta Comet of 67P is that it's not shaped like a spherical sort of object like you would think of in space. It actually is kind of got a bit of an L shape to it. And, you know, the working theory is it's actually two comets that collided at high rates of speed and actually kind of fused together. You know, they've been going around the sun probably a few times, and that pressure of the solar winds and whatnot has actually sort of kind of melted and fused the snow and all of that. So it kind of blended away obvious traces of them being two separate objects that have collided and come together. So people see that and they are thinking alien spacecraft.
So that's the only two pieces of evidence, is the odd shape and the signal coming from what NASA picked up?
The great thing about a conspiracy theory, Dave, you can make one with zero evidence.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Thanks for clearing
that
up.
Absolutely amazing. Coming in at number 6 is the other item that I led in with, is that there has been videos recently taken of the ISS where there have been, you know, maybe tricks of the light shining off of the ISS, or even debris that has come away from the ISS that has created sort of particles that are floating and catching the light in such a way that they look like shining lights or possibly UFOs that are cautiously circling the ISS and keeping an eye on mankind to see where they're going and if they're being peaceful or whatever their crazy psychotic you know, conspiracy theory is, but yes, there are aliens stalking the ISS. That is conspiracy number six here that people believe.
Are all these or most of these like related to aliens of some kind in some way?
Oh, yes.
All right.
Very much so.
Excellent.
Very much so. Yeah, all of this is alien or UFO based. Absolutely. Number five is probably one of my favorites. Number five is that the Malaysian Air plane that disappeared actually suffered from UFO interference. They claim that they have radar proof that showed a UFO interfered with the flight. And actually, maybe my second favorite theory out of all this is that it ran into a black hole. I got swallowed up by a black hole.
It's going to come out, you know what? It's going to come out back in time, and some old person's going to like come out to the media one of these days and go, I was on that flight, and we arrived back in 1955. That's my theory, at least.
Yeah. It's going to go back and hang out with Amelia Earhart.
Well, actually, you know, I think you're kind of thinking of the movie Millennium that had Cheryl Ladd in it.
That's right. Yes.
From 1989.
That was actually a terribly good movie. Like, it was terrible but good at the same time.
It was a Boeing 747 that, struck another plane and, yeah, all sorts of crazy things happened
there.
Was
that Kurt Russell that was in that movie too? Kurt Russell?
It starred Kris Kristofferson.
Okay, all right.
And another side thing of that, which is not alien or space-based, is people believe also that Vladimir Putin is a perfect clone of Hitler, and that has been kind of tied to this Malaysian Air thing, that they believe that Putin is a part of this somehow, and because he's actually a clone of Hitler.
People need to stop taking drugs.
Yeah, one of 94 separate clones of Hitler. Oh, yes. Cloning was huge at the end of World War II. A few people know this. They traveled to Argentina. I'm making this up now at this point. And now we see the beauty of a conspiracy theory. I can pull something out of my hindquarters and say it with a straight face and maybe throw a couple of half-truths at you and a conspiracy theory is born. It's that easy.
You need to start your own blog there, Brad.
Where I just make up random. See, but I couldn't be that skeezy. I mean, really, when you're throwing around that kind of misinformation, it ranks up there with those crazy anti-vaxxers, which I absolutely
just despise. Call it a social experiment.
As long as you put it up at the top, then it would be somewhat.
No,
you know, like
because
the onion or something. It'd just be satire.
I don't trust the human race enough to believe that they'll read everything. It'll be taken as gospel.
Yeah.
All right. You got any more on that list?
I do, but people should definitely check out the show notes and check the link for Alien Spotting, 8 Space Theories You Won't Believe Other People Believe from CNET. So you can go to our site, check out the show notes, and click to the CNET story.
You can also link onto the show notes in the actual whatever service you're listening to our podcast on, be it the web page, the website, or I think you can actually click on links in like players, like Stitcher and that kind of thing.
Yep, and also we post on Midwest Communications. They're 60-some-odd websites, and each of those have a link to each of the individual stories. So.
Yeah, we should mention that more often because we are on all their websites, right?
Yep, 64 websites? 60? Yeah, we keep buying radio stations, and I lose count. So it's over 60 websites throughout the Midwest.
You know what's funny? We're on 3 of the former radio stations that I used to work on. Be on the air. It's funny. I'm on your web. You may have gotten rid of me, but I'm still on your website. Damn it.
By God.
All right. Is that it? Is that a wrap?
That's a wrap for this. And I really encourage people to check out this story because number one is awesome.
Okay.
It's one of those that we reported on earlier. Actually, you know, most of these we talked about earlier, but number one is just so absolutely patently stupid that people actually believe this. It makes me weep openly for mankind.
I should really incorporate this story into the Weird World Weekly podcast that Matt Stein and I do.
Yeah.
And if you haven't checked that out yet, go to galacticnetcast.com and click on, I think, listen or subscribe, and you'll find us there. Doing very,
I send her listen.
Yeah, doing very well for a new show. We're already like close to Alien Invasion listener status as far as our subscribers go. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, the nice thing about that podcast, I noticed, is it's one subject, it's incredibly focused, and it's maybe 10, 15 minutes?
Under 15 minutes or less. Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, well worth a listen, and not much time out of your day, and it's very entertaining, and it's just you and Matt, so.
Yeah. Thank you, Brad. All right, let's move on to second story of the show, and that would be me.
Woohoo!
All right, so we've talked about the Independence Day sequel for as far as I can remember, going all the way back to the early days of this podcast. They've been talking about that sequel for years. And guess what?
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 It's finally happening! Yay!
What?
It's being greenlit. The Fox studio gave it the green light. It's going into production in May 2015, and it's shooting for a release date of July 4th, 2016, 20 years after the original film's release.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So all you people clamoring for the sequel to Independence Day, it's finally here. The day is finally here. The studio is now entering negotiations with Roland Emmerich for him to come on as director. Original star Will Smith is most likely not returning, but the casting process supposedly happening in a couple of weeks or a couple of months as soon as Emmerich is locked in. No word yet on Jeff Goldblum, but I'm guessing that he will be on for the sequel. And I'm thinking that they'll probably have the character of Will Smith, his son, or something
probably
related to that character.
Makes the most sense.
Because they had to tie him in somehow, right?
Yeah.
You would think.
Yeah, maybe he died later on or something like that. I don't know.
You're a ray of sunshine.
No.
Maybe he died. Yeah,
maybe he died. That, he couldn't be like on vacation or
you know,
something.
I don't know, because I mean, maybe it would be the filmmaker's way of kind of like being
a big middle finger.
Yeah,
to him, huh?
Yeah, a big FU towards Will Smith.
You don't want to be in our movie. You're dead.
Kill your character. How's that?
You know, Will Smith's career is not what it used to be, so I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't shown interest in this. And maybe it's not too late. Maybe they will be able to sign him. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know.
He just signed on to that Suicide Squad film. Yeah.
Suicide Squad, yeah.
Yep. All right, so not much more about this. It sounds like it's going to be this is kind of a rehash of things that we've talked about as far as the story goes on previous episodes. It's not going to be any kind of reboot or remake of the original. Sounds like it's going to actually pick up where the last one left off. You know, 30 years later, this is what happened. 20 years later. I saw a story recently that talked about all the mayhem and destruction that would have happened because of the first one, like blowing up those big ships and how they would have come down into the atmosphere and how they would have just messed up the Earth for a very, very long time. So I wonder if that's something that they would approach or talk about or deal with in the film. All that
kind of think that they would have to.
Stuff that came down that was in the sky that no longer was in the sky anymore.
Yeah.
Word.
All right, so I'm just kind of skimming this article. Of course, the project has been through more than a few phases of development over the past few years, with at least three writers taking a pass at Emmerich and frequent collaborator Dean Devlin's original draft. It seems they finally landed on something the studio wants to make. So there you go. They just wore them down. They pestered Fox so many times that they finally said, hey, you know what? Go ahead, Do your damn film. Here's the money you want. Just make
it. If I write you a check, for the love of God, will you go away?
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
And we did mention a while back that the plans were to make a number of films, like not just one sequel. Turns out, so far, it's only the one sequel. So I'm guessing that they're going to see how this one does before they actually commit to more than one sequel.
And that makes the most sense, really.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Especially in this day and age.
Yeah, movies not doing as well as they used to, so that's a big investment to make.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Final news story of the news section, and it's all you, Inessa.
Oh, my goodness. Well, my story actually ties into the craft corner in that we talk a lot about UFOs, but we don't really talk much about where they end up, potentially. And in this case, it would be in the water. Japanese folklore or folk tales inspires UFO believers. In the early 1800s, two folk tales circulated around Japan. Both involved a very strange woman emerging from a very strange ship. Her dress and appearance seemed out of this world, but what happened? One version, written in 1825, and the other one in 1844. In both versions, some sailors happened to notice, floating in the ocean, a very strange vessel. It was circular, which was not so unusual. What caught their attention was that it seemed to have a lid that covered the top of the ship and glass windows. When they got it to shore, out came a very beautiful woman holding a very mysterious box. She wouldn't let anyone touch it. They couldn't ask her about it because she didn't speak their language, and all the materials making her ship, her clothes, and her box are completely unknown to them. Eventually, the woman went back to her boat and drifted out to sea again. And that was the 1844 version, and according to IO9, that's the boring version. The more interesting version, from 1825, plays out more like an old BBC murder mystery. You can tell because the woman is more of a vamp. She has bright red hair and eyebrows, and red hair with wide extensions. Plus, the box was bigger. The size of the box provided a crafty local with an important clue, and after consideration, he announced his conclusions. The woman was a foreign princess who had an illicit love affair. The lover had been beheaded, and the princess was put to sea in a craft with his head in a box. The villagers, aghast at the hussy in their midst, pushed her and her vessel into the sea again. As short as it is, the myth about the strange-looking vessels made with foreign materials has become an enduring favorite of ufologists. They believe that, possibly, a flying saucer crashed into the sea and washed up on land. Possibly aliens were trying to blend in by matching our technology, sending flying saucers when we could send, or, you know, like, sending flying saucers when we could fly and sailing saucers when all we could do was sail.
Hmm.
When people argue, the UFO believes... believers point to the unnatural substances of the woman's clothes and the ship. They argue that although people weren't as savvy in those days as we are today, they know people in the legend were hardly yokels. They would have recognized most kinds of materials and most kinds of vessels, and this utterly foreign being might have been crash-landed or might have been on a scouting ship. So I thought that was really interesting in that, yeah, like we always look at unidentified flying objects, but we're not looking at things that might be floating around on the ocean or submerged in the oceans. So I just thought it was a really interesting story. And yeah, you end up with people who believe in extraterrestrials thinking, well, maybe it's possible that UFOs try to blend in whenever they visit Earth. They're like, oh, hey, these people have the capability of flying. We're going to fly, too.
Didn't they do that on Star Trek?
Okay, we're going to hang out on the water.
They always tried to do that on Star Trek when they went down to a planet where, especially on their trips back to, like, past Earth, like in the past on Earth, the original series, they always put the clothes on that fit the time or fit the period. So this is kind of the same thing in a way.
Right, and you see it even on other shows like Doctor Who. Sometimes whenever they travel to a specific period, they will change their attire to kind of fit in a bit more. So
except for that big that big blue police box that stands out.
Well, apparently people don't really notice a big blue box in the
damn chameleon circuit.
Foggy. So, but no, I just thought it was really interesting that maybe the UFOs are trying to blend in whenever they visit. Like, maybe they don't want us to be like, oh my God, look at all these UFOs. So
that's an interesting theory. I've never heard that before. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it kind of does if you think about it.
When you told the story, it just made me think of Seven. What's in the box? What's in the box?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Good call, Brad.
And then see, like, hey, I don't know. My mind was in the gutter. I'm like, she's like, I don't know you people. You can't touch my box.
Womp, 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 womp.
I'm just saying, she's not that easy.
And good for her.
Exactly.
You know, I love these old stories. I love these, like, just the way they describe everything. Everything is so, like, I don't know. I can't put it in words. But just the way they describe things in these old tales, especially peoples and cultures that are trying to describe something that they have no idea what it is, so they put it in their terms in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to see the interpretations of other cultures on something. So,
all right. So we're going to talk more about the unidentified submersible objects in the craft corner, right?
We are.
So let's do that, right? Is that it? Is that all you want to say about this story?
That's it.
All right. Yep. Let's move into the craft corner right now with this here.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
All right, this is the section in the show on the alien invasion where we talk about a certain alien spacecraft. We call it Craft Corner, and I have a feeling that Anessa is going to talk about unidentified submersible objects. Am I right?
What?
Yes! You are so right, Dave.
Ding, 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 ding. I win.
So, yeah, unidentified submerged objects are occasionally reported to have flown into and out of bodies of water. One of the most common types of or areas that they fly into are bodies of water that have ice. So they're going to be flying into and out of water, like bodies of water near Norway, Sweden, Russia, the Arctic. They seem to think that a lot of this has to do with the fact that the ice presents a nice cover, cloak, a place to hide. And there's not really any other barrier besides that. One of the more popular, because basically what I was able to find were a few stories or reports from back in the day about some of these USOs, and one of them being the Shag Harbor UFO incident.
Oh, I've heard of this one.
Mm-hmm. It was reported, and it was the reported impact of an unknown large object into waters near Shag Harbor, a tiny fishing village in the Canadian province of Nova Scotia, on October 4th, 1967. The reports were investigated by various civilian and military agencies for the Government of Canada and the U.S. Condon Committee. The Canadian government declared that no known aircraft was involved and the source of the impact remains unknown to this day. The craft was reported to be about 60 feet long. It was reported to have been hovering and flashing orange lights. And then it tilted at about a 45-degree angle and entered the water. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police were notified about the incident. A yellow light was reported in the water moving and leaving a trail of yellow foam. The Canadian Coast Guard was dispatched, but by the time they arrived, along with the other vessels at the point of entry, the yellow foam was all that remained. So that was one of the more popular incidents, or well-known incidents, of an unidentified submerged object. Sorry, the text is really throwing me off.
Oh, sorry. I apologize.
It's like I'm reading and then I'm seeing pop-ups. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? So.
Okay, we're done.
All right. So yeah, there's the Shag Harbor incident, and that was one of the more recent examples that I found. A couple of older ones would be June 18th, 1845, according to the Malta Times, and Malta is a group of islands in the Mediterranean south of Sicily, a British colony until 1964. Anyway, so the Malta Times says that we find the brigantine Victoria some 900 miles east of Adalia when her crew saw three luminous bodies emerge from the sea into the air. They were visible for 10 minutes flying a half a mile from the ship. There were other witnesses who saw this same UFO phenomenon from Adalia, Syria, and Malta. The luminous bodies each displayed an apparent diameter larger than the size of the full moon. So these are big bright lights coming up out of the water. That would be kind of scary to see, in my opinion, especially for that time period. Any time period, really. Right. And then on March 22nd, 1870, in the equatorial waters of the Atlantic Ocean, the sailors from the English corvette Lady of the Lake saw a lenticular cloud, which lenticular is a Or lenticular clouds are a stationary lens type shaped cloud. So it's kind of a curve, kind of circular in shape, and they're perpendicular to the ground. And they're typically, I believe, found in the troposphere. So, and they're also known as, like, I think, altocumulus lenticularis. So anyway,
watch your mouth.
So yeah, anyway, lenticular cloud. It had this circular cloud kind of curved, had a long tail advancing against the wind. This one was visible for an hour, wrote Captain F.W. Banner on the ship's log. Drawing by Banner in his log looked extraordinarily like a flying saucer. And this one didn't really sound like it was submerged, but it was seen while hanging out over the ocean. But yeah, they're not as popular or common, I guess, is unidentified flying objects, but it's still really interesting to look into and read different descriptions of these unidentified submerged objects. So I recommend doing a search because you don't really think about that.
Well, when you think about it, is the ocean is huge, right? So if aliens,
there's plenty of places to hide.
Yeah, if they want to hang out here on Earth, the ocean's the perfect place because we're not really looking there.
Yep. You've got probably more people going and exploring holes in the ground than you do exploring, like, the ocean floors.
Yeah.
Mainly because it's so deep and hard to get to anyway.
Yep, exactly.
So.
Sweet. All right. Is that pretty much it for the Craft Corner this week?
Yep.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks for cooking that up for us. I guess it's not really cooking. I was trying to think of a craft thing. Thanks for knitting that up this week there, Anessa. That's crafting, right?
Personally, I prefer crocheting.
Crocheting, okay.
So,
all right.
Yeah, I...
Thanks. Thanks for just whipping that up for us.
There you go.
We'll just make it very generic. All right. Hey, if
not
you
specific is good.
I forgot to mention this. We would love your feedback. If you have thoughts on anything that we have talked about on this episode or any of the other episodes of the Alien Invasion, we want to hear from you. All right? Two very easy ways of going about that. You can call our voicemail number, which is area code 805-328-3966. Or email galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. The voicemail again, 805-328-3966 or galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. All right, final section of the show is our picks. These are things that we have watched, listened to, played. What else? Help me out here, guys.
Experienced, taken in some fashion.
Yes, exactly. Perfect. Perfect way of describing that. And I'm going to go first this week. And I have to be honest with you guys. I didn't have time, hardly any time this week to do podcast prep. So my pick is very last minute. But it's
Were you going to use last week's pick for, or the last show's pick for this pick?
Oh, yes.
You're
I forgot
welcome.
About that. Well, it's too late now.
Because you're like, oh, I don't have time. We'll just save it for next time. And then Thanksgiving happened.
Yeah, I forgot what it was, too. I have no idea what it was. Whoops. Okay. I would have remembered that. I would have saved some time this afternoon. Okay.
Well, what you can do is look at the edit history of the document and...
Wait a second.
There's as long as you put it in there.
There's an edit history?
Yeah.
What kind
That's
of crazy?
That's the lovely thing about Google Docs is you can go back and look at the history of everything.
Yep, the revision history.
Yeah. Where do you go for that?
Click on File, I think it is.
Okay.
And then see Revision History, or you can do Control-Alt-Shift-G.
Oh, my God. Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that. All right.
Okay. And our listeners have learned something, too.
when I post the episodes on the Midwest websites, I use the Revision History. I back it up to when we did the show, and I gather the pertinent information, and I do the write-up based off of that.
Okay. All right. Well, I wish you would have told me that, or else I would have kept the doc intact, so you don't have to go.
Oh, no, it's fine.
You don't need
history.
To.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Sweet.
It makes no difference.
Okay. So maybe next time I'll go back into the revision history and look at my pick that I didn't use that one time for next time.
For next week.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so this time I did a short film called Alien Isolation. You may think, wait a second, that sounds really familiar. I've heard that somewhere before. And you have, because it's the name of the latest Alien video game called Alien Isolation.
And what?
Basically the video game takes place on a space station, and it's Ellen Ripley's daughter coming to investigate her disappearance on some space station, and then the aliens are there. The xenomorphs are there as well. But somebody made kind of a live-action fan filmy thing for it. I have not played the game, so I don't know how close to the game it is when it comes to, because they show a computer screen and the user interface. I don't know how close it is to the actual user interface in the game or other stuff that they showed in the actual film itself. But it was neat. It's very easy to. It's like 4 minutes long, so you're not wasting a lot of time watching it. I liked it. It was good. It was very intense. Very sad ending for a certain character in this film at the end. Spoiler alert. But if you like the aliens, especially the xenomorphs from the Alien movie franchise, and you like something tense, something intense, I guess is the right word. You know, suspense. You're not going to know what's going to happen. They actually show one of the xenomorphs kind of in the shadows. They don't actually show it, you know, face on, but they show it in the shadows. It's kind of a cool effect. But yeah, I will put the link in the show notes of the podcast, and you can check it out for yourself. 4 minutes long. Again, it's Alien Isolation live action fan film. So check it out.
Sweet.
Let's move on to Brad. Brad, what's your pick?
My pick this week is not listed. Son of a gun. Well, it's a book, actually.
It is a book, and it's right here in front of me.
Yeah. Hold on a sec.
It's this book.
Alien Worlds. But why don't you do the pick?
Your Guide to Extraterrestrial Life, because I haven't read it.
Okay.
So I'm not stealing Brad's pick.
I think that's the first.
I apologize.
That's the first time that you
grab it from the by the couch, and I forgot to do it. So, hey, you just saw this in an S's screen.
That's the first time I think that you both have been on the same camera at the same time on our shows. How'd you do that?
Anyways, every Saturday, Nessa and I take my son Alex to the local library, and we pick up a book and a DVD every weekend. We pick up a DVD regardless. But I saw this, and it seemed like such an interesting thing, and I thought of it as a great, you know, we do picks for adults more often than not, but I don't think that we do anything for kids. And this is actually done by Nat Geo Kids. And this is a book that was done by an artist and a very interesting dude, because he did this book, and it's a book that not only has text, but it actually has images. And David Aguilar is the name of the artist, and he has constructed basically mixed media. When I say mixed media, I'm talking about, I'm going to pull up, here's a picture from inside the book. Okay. And this is a bit of, not air dry clay, but like Prima. It's a clay that you can shape and then you put in the oven and you can harden it.
Oh, so it's a photograph.
So it's a lot of it. Well, it's more often than not, it's Photoshop. So he will take a photo of a piece of art that he's done, and he will punch it up or modify it or add other elements to it in Photoshop to not only take that piece of artwork, but like in this case, we've got a mixture of maybe 3D render background and also like a real life art object, which is I believe the ship in this case.
That's
is kind of a
so cool looking.
Mixture of stuff.
You guys should check out the video version of this podcast on YouTube and just to see the pictures that he's showing.
Sadly, this is very visual, but he's actually, what he's done in this case is he's taken five different planets, fake planets, and came up with different conditions for them and put in the kind of the fictitious, mankind has found these planets and we can travel to these faraway planets, these exoplanets, and here's life. Here's how life has evolved here. Here's why this particular kind of life has evolved here. This is an early stage of a planet and the type of life that would be on an early stage, a young planet, and what type of life that might evolve on a very old or have evolved into on a very old planet. So it's very much a taking science and taking art and taking imagination, kind of putting them all together to kind of give a very interesting, stimulating environment for kids to try to understand evolution and exoplanets. And at the end, and it's the other kind of cool thing, at the end of this, and unfortunately I haven't had a chance to do with this with Alex at all, but it gives you a list of, you know, hey, we should make an alien. And here's some things that you can use to make an alien. You can get paints. You can get this clay that I was talking about. You can get, you know, straws. You can get things from around the house. And you can make your own alien and create your own story.
Cool.
And imagine life on other planets. So, I was flipping through this book while Alex was looking at a Disney DVD that he was interested in at the library, and I thought, oh man, I want to give this a try. This looks really fascinating, and by golly, if it isn't. It's called Alien Worlds, Your Guide to Extraterrestrial Life by David Aguilar, and it's from National Geographic Kids. And we'll have a link to it in the show notes and whatnot. I'm sure you can purchase it, but like I said, I got this at the local library.
Neat.
And if you have kids, or even if you enjoy art, or making art on your own, and you're an adult, flipping through this, like I said, there's science in here too. It's a marriage of science and imagination, and it's a great explanation of exoplanets and how life might come to be on an exoplanet. So, yeah,
sweet.
Give it a check out.
Great
pick,
Brad.
It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Yeah, don't forget about the libraries, guys. Libraries are still there with all kinds of cool stuff. In fact, our library just across the way, there's a parking lot between where I live and our local library. They have a 3D printer there. A 3D printer.
What?
Yes.
Oh, that's insane. I'm going to Canada.
I was kind of miffed at UNT for getting the 3D printer after I left.
You know what's funny about this 3D printer? It was given to us, or given to that library, by the country of the United States of America. Isn't that weird?
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. All right. So we are running against the clock here. Brad, you just did your pick?
I'm finished.
I did my pick. Now it's Inessa's turn. What do you got?
My pick actually ends up tying into everything else I've talked about this evening. It's a movie called Destination Interspace. It was made in 1966, I think. Late 60s, mid to late 60s. Really cheesy. And the description on IMDb says, strange goings on at the site of an experimental underwater laboratory as a mysterious object of unknown origin is detected in the area. A group of researchers investigate and come face to face with the object, a large automated extraterrestrial probe. They board the craft and discover a small object, at first considered to be some sort of instrument package, which they take back to the lab for closer inspection. It is then that the events take a turn for the worse.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, well, because what's funny is, you know, they're seeing this craft swim, not really fly, but swim about the ocean. And it's disc-like. It's got like a tail rudder thing to kind of steer it. And it's along the bottom of the ocean. They're like, it's at least 50 meters or something. I forget the dimensions wide. And it looks like it's a, you know, they talk like it's supposed to be this huge thing. And then you see it up against the bottom of the ocean. And it's next to like this little seaweed. I'm like, the thing's tiny. It's just really hokey. And, you know, they're trying to figure out what it is. They're thinking that it might be some sort of Russian or Japanese submarine. And, like, maybe they've developed some sort of new technology. And this underwater lab, they've got, you know, both men and women working. And one of the women, she helps document and capture some images from underwater. She's like an underwater photographer type person. And she's wanting to get closer images of this, and so they eventually go and, you know, they finally find where this ship is settled at, and they go to look for it, and they go to explore it. And it's so funny how at the beginning of the movie they're like, oh, it's probably Russians, oh, you know, some other communist country, and Cold War, yada 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 sort of thing. And then they set foot and they're like, oh, this is totally extraterrestrial. Like, just out of nowhere, they're like, oh, this is totally from space. Like, duh.
Funny.
It's totally not the Russians. And so they see this capsule sitting there on the floor, and they're like, oh, let's take that with us, because, you know, this one of our researchers might want to take a look at this, because it's a totally awesome idea. And then this capsule grows and grows and grows, and spoiler alert, there's aliens. And, yeah, like, the alien itself looks like this weird lizard-slash-piranha-type creature. He's got, like, a bunch of scales, but he's got four legs and, like, ugly, frowny piranha face. And he's just kind of swimming around and terrorizing the sea lab, and they're trying to figure out a way to fight it and get rid of this vessel. And so that's their struggle, is dealing with it. And there's a lot of conflict amongst the group as to how they should handle it, because you've got the scientist that wants to research, and then you have the other people who are like, we have to destroy it. And so, yeah, there's a lot of conflict, and it's cheesy, but the acting was tolerable for the most part. It wasn't like, oh no, monster coming at me, whatever shall I do? I've seen really crappy movies, and I didn't think that one was quite as bad as some of the ones that I've watched.
How many?
It gets like a 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb.
Oh.
Which, you know, there are worse things that I've seen, but it was all right.
How many smokers in this movie? How many people smoking all the time?
You know, I don't recall seeing anyone smoke.
Huh.
If there were, it might have been just like one or two. Their wardrobe kind of bothered me for being in a sea lab. It was mainly the divers that bothered me, because it's like they could only afford half of a diving suit, and it was the top half, and then they wore like these short swimming trunks regardless if you were male or female, and then the top half of the diving suit for the male had, because there was one guy that wore a yellow one, and then there was another one that wore like this light green, maybe jade color, and like it like snaps together at the crotch, and so it's like their crotch is highlighted because they're wearing like black swim trunks, and there's like bright yellow crotch.
Their crotch is highlighted.
Their crotches were highlighted. I don't know how else
check out my crotch
to describe it. But at least the female, you know, she wore the short shorts much like the men, but her crotch wasn't highlighted. She had like the swim top, and then she actually had like a hood that pulled over, and so it was, I think she got the better end of the deal when it came to the costuming. And as far as the undersea monster, he was, of course, kind of cheesy, but I will say that his costume really wasn't that bad. Like, they actually took the time to create scales on the costume, and they weren't just painted on with the occasional scale. It looked like someone put a lot of effort into sewing these flakes or scales on him, so that was kind of cool.
What year was this?
I recommend if you've got an hour and a half and don't mind watching something rated less than a 5 on IMDb, then you give this movie a watch. I came across it on Amazon Prime. So
what year was this?
I believe it was 1966. I will have to double check that, though. It might be 68.
Okay.
1966. And it kind of hokey, but what do you expect?
Yeah.
And I'm not really familiar. Like, there were a couple of semi-familiar faces, but I can't place where I've seen them before. Some of the actors listed were Scott Brady as Commander Wayne, Sherry North, Gary Merrill is Dr. Lesacier, Wendy Wagner, John Howard.
All these actors sound like I should know them, but
I'm
not sure.
There were a couple of actors that I'm like, he looks familiar, but I'm not quite sure what I've seen him in. So I'm sure these are people that we've probably seen before, just can't place the name or the face.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Anessa. Great picks this week. Let's review. Destination Interspace. We had Alien World, Your Guide to Extraterrestrial Life from National Geographic Kids, and my Alien Isolation live-action fan film. And we'll have the links to all these in the show notes of the podcast. Speaking of the podcast, please subscribe if you haven't yet. We are all over the place. You can just go to our website, galacticnetcasts.com, and click on the subscribe button, or search for us on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Follow us on Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. And we pump out some great content during the week. Stories relating to science fiction and alien stuff once in a while, weird stuff once in a while as well. Also want to make one more mention before we get out of here to check out our sister podcast on the Galactic Netcast Network, the Sci-Fi Geeks Club, kind of a review of the week's science fiction with a great panel of hosts and guests this week. This newest episode is going to be Justin Robert Young, and we're getting set to record that next. So let's get out of here, folks. Thanks for listening to The Alien Invasion. And as we always do, final thoughts. Brad, what do you got?
You know, you talked about Alien Isolation, and I remember watching a video of people playing that game with the Oculus Rift.
Oh, my God. That'd be the perfect game with Oculus Rift.
And the level of pants-wetting action with that kind of immersion was pretty intense. You can find this on YouTube. And people were like really genuinely scared with incredibly raised heart rates, just being that immersed into the game.
I hear the game is awesome either way, even without the Oculus Rift. I hear it's a great game. So if you are into video games, I'd check it out. All right, Anessa, what do you got?
I have a snowman ornament from Dunkin' Donuts.
Yay! Tis the season.
It looks like a munchkin and a donut, powdered donut, and a couple of coffee stirrers or something.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I don't really have a final thought.
Well, that's good enough. It's perfect.
I'm still trying to get used to the color of the Chromebook that I'm using. It's a very bright color, very happy coral.
It's not
coral.
It's not flat like everything else on Google these days. It's not a flat color.
Well, it's very loud.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So
perfect.
It's a happy color. It's noticeable.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to The Alien Invasion. We will catch you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to a presentation of GalacticNetcasts.com. For more about the show you just listened to, including how to subscribe, give us feedback, links to our social feeds, and more, please visit www.galacticnetcasts.com.